Okay, let's learn Shvivei Lev, page Resh Lamed Zayin, Ay Samach Dalet. It's going on last week's parasha, but we'll call it this week's parasha because Vayakol Pekudei does very often come together, and it's a very important yisaid. So Vayakel Moshe is called Das Bnei Yisrael. The pasuk says that Moshe Rabbeinu gathered the entire nation. And then it says after that, after the whole parsha that of what he said about keeping Shabbos, etc. And then it says Vayetzu kol hadas bnei Yisrael milfnei Moshe, that the whole nation left from the presence of Moshe Rabbeinu. So it seems to be like a little bit of a redundancy. First, the pasuk says Vayakel Moshe is kol hadas bnei Yisrael. The Moshe Rabbeinu gathered the entire nation. After he finishes the assembly, so we understand that they left. It doesn't have to say that. Why does it have to say, Vayetzu kol hadas bnei Yisrael milfnei Moshe? Obviously, after the conference is over, people leave the conference. What do you want people to do? Stay there forever? Why does the Torah have to go out of its way and tell us that they left from Moshe? And Rabbi Lapian says, Kleimer, Hayu nikur bahem shahayu etzal Moshe v'achshav yatzim milfanav. What it means is that they didn't just leave. When Klal Yisrael left the presence of Moshe Rabbeinu, if you would see a yid after they left, they'd look different. They wouldn't look the same. Because when you're in the presence of somebody that's a real tzaddik, like Moshe Rabbeinu, and you have the ability to bask in their glory, in their rays, so then it's a different leaving. It's a different, you don't just leave, you leave lit up, you're excited, you're changed. Vayetzu kol hadas bnei Yisrael milfnei Moshe. They went away from Moshe Rabbeinu, and it was recognizable that they were walking away from Moshe Rabbeinu. They looked different. Kasha Yitzuyar im tira adam yetze me'eza beis v'na v'nad v'alichasai. If you see a person leaving a certain building and they're swaying, they're not like walking in a straight line, they're walking in a sort of a crooked wobble, teda, you'll know right away, she yatze beis marzach v'shasa sham l'shichra, that they came from a bar, came from a tavern, and got drunk there. It's easy to tell where a person comes from under certain circumstances. V'chein lehepach, makirim adam shu yetze ma'yeshiva achrei shir b'atayra b'musar shu shakua b'machshaves k'dayshes v'chidushay tayra. That when a person, lehavdil, leaves a bar, you could tell. You see his eyes are bloodshot. He's not walking straight. He's saying funny things. When a person, lehavdil elef alfei avdalos, leaves the yeshiva, when you walk out of a shir, and you walk out of a zman, and you walk out of a graduation, and you're a ben Torah now, so then there should be a certain radiance, a shine on a person's face, and it should be recognizable that such a person learned in yeshiva. If a person is not that way, then you know you have to wonder what he was doing all day in yeshiva. V'zeh v'yeitzu kol hadas bnei Yisrael milufnei Moshe, shayu nikarim shezeh achshav amdu lufnei Moshe. People could tell. You could tell when people were standing in front of Moshe Rabbeinu. V'yachein im leinikar al ben yeshiva shu shakua b'atayra gam achar yitzias l'rechayiv. If it's not recognizable in a ben yeshiva that he's living and learning, that he is engrossed in his Torah even after he goes out onto the street, simen gadol shu hu shegam mikaydem lahaya b'yeshiva v'chein ador v'maisem midas taivais v'rim l'ben Torah. Rabbi Lapian is teaching us a very important yesaid, and that is that there are a lot of boys in yeshiva, in every yeshiva. In our yeshiva, I don't know what the magic number is. It doesn't really matter. But just because you're officially on the list of yeshiva, just remember, I have to do a list of attendances and stuff. But just because you're on a list does not mean that you're officially in yeshiva. You could be in yeshiva all you want, and say your parents might be paying tuition for yeshiva, and you might be eating the food of the yeshiva, and you might be sleeping in the dorms, but that doesn't mean that a person is in yeshiva. Being in yeshiva means that there's a certain hashpa that a person has by being in yeshiva. And when a person goes home for Shabbos or goes home for Yontif, people that see him in their local shul should be able to see, wow, he's a Ben Torah. He looks different. He looks like he has a certain glow to him, a certain shine. He's different. His mind is absorbed in learning. And that's what a yeshiva is supposed to do. If a yeshiva is not doing that to us, then either it means that we're not working hard enough in yeshiva, or it means that we're not in yeshiva. And that's not a shtach. That's just the plain reality. Sometimes guys, they're not in yeshiva. They're not in by davening. They're not here first seder. They're not here for night seder. They're not here Shabbos. They're not here. So I never understood, like, why are you wasting your parents' money? Like, what your parents are paying, assuming that they're paying full tuition, they're paying like 3-4 times as much as they would pay for an online degree or for going to Queens College or something like that. So why are you wasting your parents' money? Like, what's the point? Like, why be here if you're not? Is it for, I'm sure there are schools of equal, colleges of equal status that you can go to that are much less expensive, much less taxing. So I don't get it so much. But Baruch Hashem, I'm talking to people that are in yeshiva, so I could speak freely here. But that is the one of the litmus tests of knowing if a boy was in yeshiva, is you could see on his face that he was in yeshiva. You could see when he's walking in the street that he's a Ben Torah. You could see the way he walks and the way he acts. And the ripple effects of that is very powerful. The ripple effects of behaving like a Ben Torah out of yeshiva is very, very powerful. I know I have a friend who I went to yeshiva with for high school, and he was like the elder Rebbe. He was like maybe 4 or 5 years older than me, a very chashuv of a person. And eventually he grew and grew and grew, and today he's like one of the Rosh Hashivas of the yeshiva. 2 Rosh Hashivas, he's one of them. And he told me once, or somebody told me, that why did he end up going to that yeshiva that he's today like a big Rosh Hashiva of? Because his father and him used to daven in a certain shul. They live actually in Kew Gardens. And in that shul, there was a boy from that very yeshiva, a few years older than him. And when he came home for Shabbos, for Yontif, he davened like so nicely, davened with kavana, and he was, just behaving himself and not talking during davening and acting like a real Ben Torah. So the father of my friend said, that's the yeshiva that I want my son to go to. Otherwise, he would have maybe gone to a different yeshiva, maybe a good yeshiva, but like just a different yeshiva. But he sent him specifically to that yeshiva because that bacher wasn't looking to recruit him to that yeshiva. He was just doing his own thing. But when you're acting like a Ben Torah, then you're creating vibrations that spread far and wide. That's a Kiddush Hashem. You can't, like in Eretz Yisrael today, right? All of a sudden we had tremendous achdus in Klal Yisrael. Everybody's getting along. And the Haredim were doing their part, and they were learning and davening, and they were, giving blood and volunteering, and everything was going well. And then all of a sudden, the Satan again jumps into the fray and says, "Okay, there has to be a gezeira. We have to make all the Haredim go to the army." And now again, there's like a big debate brewing, and a lot of machleik. The Satan always has a way of trying to disrupt the achdus in Klal Yisrael, but if Bnei Torah here and in Eretz Yisrael and everywhere would behave like really properly, and like they would be learning properly and davening properly and be respectful, and I think that there's a higher probability that this wouldn't be such a raging debate. It's when when we don't act properly, when it's not nicker on our faces that we're really, you know, doing what we're supposed to be doing, that's when I think the satan has a much easier job of selling. Why do they have to be in yeshiva? Let them go out of yeshiva, because there's something about a ben Torah that you can either, you either see that they're learning. I'm not being mitzi lazan klal yisrael chas v'shalom, but when we're doing our part, then people respect Bnei Torah, people respect Haredim, but we have to be doing what we're supposed to be doing. Vayetzu kol hadas Bnei Yisrael milifnei Meisha means that when you're standing in front of Meisha, and it doesn't mean literally Meisha, it means any shir that's given, any Torah dika shir, any shmuz, any shir klali, any vad, and when you walk out of the room, we should be radiating a different type of otherworldly kedusha, because that's what Torah does to a person. And it's a very powerful yisayid that Rabbi is teaching us tonight, that we have to be different. If we're coming into yeshiva, yeshiva has to have the ability to change a person. And, you know, and if it doesn't, then it might be that we're not using the yeshiva properly. Okay, let's see another piece here. Let's see Samach Zayin. Hakina v'atayva v'akavad mitzien es ha'adam na'ilam. Kina, taiva, and kavad. Jealousy, desire, and honor are mitzi a person from the world. Klaimar, gimel mides halalu nilvim tamid el ha'adam. V'le mistalkim imenu gam be'esek nusay. At she mitzien es ha'adam. Es ha'adam klaimar afilo adam agadol. Im yesh bei midais halalu mitzien heim eisai min ha'ilam. What this means is that, and this is very true, I mean, you could see it. When a person doesn't work on their midas, when a person has kina and taiva and kavod, you think like you age out of it at one point. But unfortunately, it's not true. It doesn't go away. It's mitzien es adam min ha'ilam. Even when a person is old, it still is with a person. It's es ha'adam, meaning even an adam gadol, if he has these midas, they will escort him out of this world. Sometimes you think, you know, these things are things that a child does. A child is jealous. A child has petty grievances against other people. A child has cravings. But then if you look at adults, even senior citizens, even like really old people, like if you go into the nursing home even, or you go into a senior living, I once visited a relative of mine in Eretz Yisrael in a senior living, what do you call it, assisted living facility. And she was talking to me and she was saying how, you see that lady over there? You know, we call her this because she has that. And like mom was speaking like a, you know, like there's cliques. There's cliques even in senior, in assisted living places. It's amazing. You think, okay, cliques is for girls in high school or like little kids in a sandbox. You don't think of like when you live through a whole life that you're still like doing cliques and doing ignoring people and you know having taivas and jealousies, having grievances and lashon hara. But unfortunately, if a person doesn't work on themselves, if a person does not work on their midas, so it's mitzi a person min ha'ilam. It will escort you out of this world. You never get it out of your bloodstream. You never get it out of your system because it's there. It's something that's there. There's a beautiful maisa about Rabbi Elia Lapian himself. The Rabbi Elia Lapian was walking. He had a friend over to his yeshiva. He was the yeshiva, or depends which yeshiva, but I think he was the mashkiach of in Kfar Chasidim, and he had an old friend that came to visit him. That old friend happens to be a very close friend of mine's grandfather. He's a tremendous Eloy, a big Talmud Chacham. He was Nifter many years ago, but he was close to Rabbi Lapian. I think they knew each other from England. And Rabbi Eliezer was before davening, like in his apartment, pacing back and forth, back and forth. And he says, he kept saying to himself, Tayavas Hashem kol gevalev. Tayavas Hashem kol gevalev. That it's an abomination to Hashem, anyone that has gaiva. He kept like pummeling that into his head again and again and again. And his friend was like observing. He says, what do you keep saying to yourself? So he says, Tayavas Hashem kol gevalev. Says, why are you saying that? Where's the gaiva? So he says, listen. He says, we're about to go into the Beis Medrash to daven. And there's a lot of people davening. You'll see it's a big minyan. It's a big island in the yeshiva. And they wait for me to say, to finish Shema. Say Hashem Elokeichem Emes, and to say, and to take three steps back by Shemoneh Esrei before they say Kaddish, they start Chazaras HaShatz. He says, and when I'm there in the room and they're waiting for me, so there's a certain sense of gaiva. You feel a little bit of pride and hubris, like, everybody's waiting for me. I'm the big kahuna here. I'm like, people are actually, they all have to wait for me. And so I'm trying to get rid of that. I'm trying to extract that feeling of gaiva from my system before I walk into the Beis Medrash to daven. Which is an amazing thing. He wasn't a youngster. He was probably in his 80s by then. And he still was, he was honest. He was very open. He was very real about it, authentic. But, you know, it speaks to this exact Indian that he's speaking about. That hakina v'ataiva v'akavod, you have kavod, it will be mitzi. If you're not able to get rid of it, and it's hard to get rid of it, it's very hard to get rid of all these midas. Kina, jealousy, I think, is the hardest of all midas to get rid of. If you want to work on kina, if it's something that you're interested in doing, it's very hard, like I said, but I recommend one sefer for it, and that's Archa Sadikim. Archa Sadikim has a chapter in it called Shara Kina, and it speaks out, like I think no other sefer, the folly of being jealous of somebody else and how it ruins a person's life. Like when you're looking jealously at other people, how it totally, like he uses such great lashonis. He says, everybody's able to enjoy their food except for the person who's jealous. Meaning you go to a chasna, there's let's say 600 people in the room and they're all enjoying the shmorg and they're eating and they're, you know, the music and everything is good. But there's one guy, if it would be like, if you take a still picture, there would be like that, you know, the circle around his head that you see sometimes in pictures, like to identify somebody. That guy is not enjoying the night. He can't enjoy the taste of the food. He can't enjoy the music. He can't. Why? Because he's busy looking at somebody. It might be the chassan. It might be the father of the chassan. It might be the, you know, some random person. And he's looking at him jealously. Like, why did this guy get to be in this position? Why did he get to be so wealthy? How come he looked so good? How did he lose that weight? He's always jealous. And the jealousy does not allow him to live. Which means that he might himself have a very nice life. He might have a wonderful wife and children and a house. But if there's somebody else that has more than he does, he can't enjoy his life. He can't enjoy his life. This is an hyperbole. He literally does not. What do you mean? He has a pool in his backyard. He goes away for Pesach to hotel. He has everything that he has. Beautiful. Yeah, but if somebody has more than him, he can't enjoy. He's jealous. It literally takes you out of this world. You don't have a life. A person that has kina has no life, period. The worst thing that a person can do, and I've said this a million times, is to look at social media. Besides for the schmutz on it, which we know, but there's also just even like from statuses or from, Instagram accounts, if there is such a thing, or from... what are you doing? You're taking your eyes and you're looking at other people, and whatever they're posting becomes like food, your diet for today. So if you see somebody is in Eretz Yisrael, davening by the Kaisel, takes a beautiful picture with a sunset or whatever, and now what does that do to you? Oh man, how did he make that money? He's already making good money. He's able to go to Israel. He's staying in fancy, he's eating in that Schmitz restaurant. He just bought himself a new suit. He just got engaged to this girl. And like, you're just like, you just keep on feeding into whatever people are selling. Your eyes are seeing thousands of images, and they're all basically telling you one thing, that everybody has a life except for me. That's what it says. That's what Instagram is. I don't know why people even look at Instagram. It's just like, I guess it's like rubbernecking. Like, you know what rubbernecking is? When you're driving a car and like there's an accident like next to you and you're, you know, you have to slow down, but you don't have to slow. You could drive, but everybody wants to see the accident. What do you want to see that? That's called rubbernecking. Like, and that causes a lot of extra wasted time on the road because everybody that passes by a scene of an accident has to stare at it. Why are you staring at it? Because there's a certain part of a human being that even though you know that you shouldn't be looking at something, you have like this taiva to look at something that you shouldn't. It's a funny part of us human beings. We like seeing things even though we know that it's not good for us. But these are things that are really, there's a great quote I saw once. I don't think it's a Jewish quote, but it says, comparison is the thief of happiness. Whenever you start comparing yourself to somebody else, you're robbing yourself of happiness. You're robbing yourself of happiness because, you know, it's chaval. I could be a happy person. I have, Baruch Hashem, I'm healthy. Baruch Hashem, I have some money. Baruch Hashem, I have a family. So why am I not happy? Because I'm comparing myself to everybody else. You have to stay in your own lane. You have to run a race against yourself and your own potential, and that's it. The second that you start looking at that guy, he woke up a little bit earlier than me, and he did better on the test than me, got into a better graduate school than I. The second you start playing that game, your life is done. Your life is done, and it will never end. You know, until you think people in nursing homes are not looking at other people's Instagram pages and other nursing homes' Instagram. Like, it just doesn't end. Everybody is staring at everybody else, especially because of this terrible thing called social media, which somebody wise once said, it's Rosh HaTevis Samach Mem. Social media, Samach Mem. Samach Mem is like the name, one of the names of the Yetzirah, of the Satan, that we can't even pronounce his name. But it is, it's pure evil. Because it's taking away people's enjoyment of life. You can't enjoy your life because you're busy obsessing about other people's life. And the truth is that they're obsessing on your life. You think they're happy? They're not happy. They're looking at you and thinking that you have it all. And so in the end, nobody's happy. But the people that are really happy are people that are able to understand this. Hakina v'taiva v'kavod meitzinas adam ha'olam. If you're always looking for that taiva and for that kavod and you're chasing after it, you will die from it. It will be meitzi you from this world. Doesn't mean that you're going to necessarily physically die. It's meitzi, you will not have a life today. I don't know how many years we're going to live. It's irrelevant. But it's my sinas adam and ailam. You're removing yourself from this world. You have no enjoyment of ailam haza because you're too busy. I'll tell you a story of a friend of mine. When we were in yeshiva together, he was probably around, I don't know, 19, 20 years old, I would say. And he told me the following story. He lives in a very affluent community in the Five Towns in Long Island somewhere. And he was walking home from shul with a very wealthy guy, like one of the wealthiest guys in this very affluent community. And they stopped, like they were walking home from shul, they stopped outside of this rich guy's home. My friend was just the bacher, he didn't have any money, but he was talking to this guy. So imagine like the backdrop, like he's talking to this man, very, very successful, and in the back of this man is his house with beautiful, big, manicured lawns and trimmed hedges and magnificent edifice and a swimming pool and a house next to it for the maid and bakal mikokol, beautiful sports cars in the driveway. This is the backdrop of this guy who's talking to my friend. And my friend says, you know, lately you don't seem so happy. Like what's going on? So he said, I'll tell you. There's another guy that just recently moved into town, and he's also quite well-to-do, and he's building like a much, much bigger house than I have. He's building like a crazy big house. It's an insane house. If I have, you know, 10 bedrooms, he has 20 bedrooms. If I have like an Olympic-sized pool, he has a double infinity Olympic-sized pool. And if I have one tennis court, he has two. Everything that I have, he's double. He says, nope, so, but you still have a beautiful house. He says, that? He's like pointing to the house behind him. He says, to me, that my house is garbage now. It's completely, it's like he said, it's like he's living in a refrigerator box. That's, in his mind, that's what he's thinking. It's a sickness. It's mamash disgusting, right? It's like, what are you doing? Hashem has given you so much and this is your attitude. But this is what happens when a person doesn't work on their midas. It's not like we didn't necessarily cause it. We have it. It's maybe in our genes or it's maybe in everyone's genes. We all have maybe an atiyah towards being jealous of people. Maybe it starts from childhood. Maybe it's nature. I don't know if it's nature, nurture, or combination. But whatever it is, we all, let's say, have, with certain exceptions, we have this need to compete and to compare ourselves to other people. But if we don't, at one point in our life, stop ourselves and say, this is insane, I don't want to live my whole life this way and always be looking at other people, then we will be that guy in the nursing home that's like, you know, that is still like making clicks against another guy and looking at another person and you know, giving them ayinaras. It never ends. We don't want that. We want a life for ourselves that we can actually breathe, that we can enjoy our home, we can enjoy our family, we could feel like this is what Hashem gave me and Baruch Hashem. And it's something that you have to work on. It's something that you have to work on. And you know, the only real way to work on it is Musar. There's really very few options other than learning. Archa Sadiqim, I'm telling you, is a great resource. There's English books, I'm sure, on all these topics, but I don't think it does the same, gives the same treatment as the Archa Sadiqim, just the lashon that he uses, specifically by Kinna. Each of these are, you know, you could write a whole book on each of these. Kinna, Taiva, you know, the Taivas that people have, running after everything that, you know, that looks good. And it's also a terrible thing. Like, we keep giving into the Eitz Hara, keep giving into our Taivas, and we want more and more and more. We're never satisfied. There's a Gemara that says about, it's talking about specifically the Taiva of Tashmish, but it says that Mar'ivai Saveya Maspiai Ra'iv. Meaning that the more that you give it, if you feed it, and you think, okay, I'll do this one time, I'll do the taiva one time, you know, whatever the Avera Chamura one time, and then I'll be over it. You know, then I got it out of my system, I'm fine. No. If you're Maspia, if you feed it, you give it more and more and more, then it's Roiv, it's constantly hungry, it needs more. It needs more and more and more. And if you're Mar'iva, if you starve it, if you don't give it what it wants, then ironically, it's okay. It's okay. The worst thing, it's counterintuitive, but the worst thing that you could do if you're trying to deal with your taivas is to give in to them. Because it's not like you're giving into it and now it's going to be happy. It gets hungrier and hungrier and hungrier. But if you starve and you say, I'm not doing it, by yimayin, then you're able to control it more and more, and then you'll be okay. You'll be okay. That's what Chazal are maftiach us. So taiva is also one of these things that, and you see, like, it never goes away, taiva. It can be a bachar has very strong taivas. Middle-aged people, you see, they have crazy taivas. Even older people, you know, you see, they have taivas. So it doesn't really go away unless, again, we really try to work on it. And of course, kavod, like we said, Rabbi Lapian is in his 80s. And he was made, I think, Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, they say stories also, like how, you know, sometimes you have gedolim that are very refreshingly honest about their, like, because Bali Musar, they're not, like, embarrassed to admit things. They're in touch with they're able to take the pulse of where they're holding in terms of midas and in terms of, you know, hanhaga. So I think Reb Chaim Shmulevitz used to say that, like, he would drive in from a chasna, from Bnei Brak to Yerushalayim, no, from Yerushalayim to Bnei Brak. He lived in Yerushalayim. So he would go to Bnei Brak. And he would sometimes, like, when he knew that he was going to be called up for a kibud, he would stand he would sit a little further back in the crowd so that when they call up his name, he would, like, have more time to like be in the limelight. That seems like what Reb Chaim Levitz. He was honest. Like everybody, I think, feels that way a little bit when they in a position of covet. But like he was honest enough to talk about it, which is he was teaching us, in other words, how as old as a person. He says, "I drove all the way from Bnei Brak, all the way from Yerushalayim to Bnei Brak. I couldn't like walk up a few more steps before the chuppah started." But that's how life is, and if you don't, again, it's hard to work on these things because it's very natural and you want it and you need it. But if you're able to somehow work on it and just appreciate the things that you do have and don't compare yourself to other people and just try to be happy and try to say, Baruch Hashem, I have this and Baruch Hashem, I have that. And I know that my life is not perfect. This is not saying that everybody here is life is absolutely perfect, but it could always be a lot worse, that's for sure. As much as we have lacking, there are people, you know, that you don't have to look very far to find people that have it a lot, lot worse. And that alone is something to give Shevach to Hashem for. But we have so much. We're in yeshiva and we're Bnei Torah and we have food and we have heat and we have air conditioning. We have so much. We have our health, hopefully. And so these are things that are critical for a person to work on and to think about, because otherwise it's Metzinas Adam and Olam. A person will, first of all, be out of this world. He's not going to be able to live normally. And also it will follow him ad yayim maisei, until he's an old man at the end of his life. He still is going to be injured. I think they say about, I think a Katzker Chassid, I don't think it was the Rebbe, but a Katzker Chassid, like a very Chassid. It's an amazing story. He was on his deathbed. He's on his deathbed, and they asked him, like, he's about to say Shema. They said, Rebbe, like, what are you thinking about right now? What are you thinking about as you're about to say Shema? He says, honestly, so I'm thinking, if I say Shema with like a little bit extra kavana, like I say, I do it a little bit more dramatically, then by my levaya, they'll say that he died with Kabbal Samach Hashema Imam Mishagra Al Piv. In other words, the last breath that a person takes in life, he's still obsessing about some like crazy covet that nobody even cares about. But that's what a person is plagued by. It's a plague. It's literally, you know, a terrible, terrible klal that a person has to always carry around this craziness of covet and of kinnah and of taiva. And it's difficult to extract it and to expunge it from our systems. But as Bachrim, if you could do it, if you could work on it, and if you want, we could talk about it afterwards and we can try to figure out ways to, but the more that you're able to get rid of it now, you'll be so much happier for the rest of your life.